Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster, only working from my home studio in New York. As we get started today, some news and notes. First off, Major League Baseball will be bringing some transparency to the testing process. Sources told me yesterday that Major League Baseball will release the numbers related to the testing that we see coming up, the number of total tests, the number of players that test positive, and the percentages. There will not be a release of the specific names, that in part to honor, to respect HIPAA law, and something that the Player Association has been pushing against. The Mets hitting coach Chili Davis will participate in that team summer camp remotely, at least at the outset of this. Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hottabee detailed his fight against the coronavirus in an emotional interview on a Zoom call with reporters yesterday. Give a listen to the Cubs pitching coach.
Sorry, give me a second. It's still kind of, raw in the fact that we just got through it, and to like relive it, obviously it affected us. If we take the necessary steps, which I know MLB is, I know our organization is doing a fantastic job of setting up protocols, give us the best chance to be successful in what we want to do. I do still believe, like, for the society and for people, having sports, having baseball, just having them give hope to, what we've all been dealing with. I do think it's important.
The Baseball Writers Association of America, which presents the annual MVP awards, will consider whether the name of former Commissioner Kennesaw Mountain Landis should be pulled from future plaques. Jack O'Connell is that organization's longtime secretary treasurer, and he told the Associated Press the issue is being addressed. It will definitely be put up for discussion. We talked about this in the podcast on Wednesday, how it does feel like Frank Robinson would be the absolute perfect replacement for Kennesaw Mountain Landis. The Cardinals have replaced the Yankees as the opponent for the White Sox in the Field of Dreams game that was scheduled for August 13th. That is scheduled for August 13th in Dyersville, Iowa. It was first reported by the Des Moines Register. Of course, the reason for this change is because they've changed the scheduling format, where the Yankees now will be playing only against American League East and National League East opponents. Today, we'll be talking with Matt Viskirjan about the feeling around baseball, about the testing and the transparency to come. And, of course, Todd Radom, the chief executive of our weekly quiz, will be joining us today. But don't forget, as you go into this holiday weekend, as you're going about your altered 4th of July plans, ESPN Podcast has an entire roster of shows that have been doing a phenomenal job over the course of the pandemic. Check out the new episodes of the Bill Barnwell Show and the Adam Schefter podcast for the latest on the NFL offseason. The Low Post, Hoop Collective, and the Woj Pod have been covering the NBA's efforts to restart its season. The College Football Podcast has been talking to big-time coaches across the sport. Or if you want to break out of the ball and stick variety, The Right Time with Bomani Jones has been excellent of late. And congratulations, by the way, to Bomani for the contract extension that he just got. You can find all of those shows and more wherever you get your podcast.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Matt Viscursion is the play-by-play man on Sunday Night Baseball. And Matt, I think also you would qualify as one of the bravest humans in America if, in fact, we wind up doing these games from our home studios, because, you know, I can do games now, and my daughter is 20 years old, and she doesn't want to be around me at this stage anyway. My 16-year-old, he's off playing video games someplace, but you have little kids. Trying to pull that off in a home studio with little kids in the house, wow.
Yeah, I don't know what makes more noise in here, the five-year-old or the dog. And two teenage girls as well, who, when they want to be, they can be pretty loud too. They will, at least to your point, understand, hey, girls, can you just keep it down for, I don't know, 4 hours so we can do this here? and I don't think anybody has actual soundproof facilities in their home. Maybe musicians and people that work on a very high end, but not you or I. So yeah, if we're doing these games from home, challenges abound.
Yeah. How would your five-year-old handle that if that winds up happening? Because I can tell you this, like my daughter, from the time she was two or three, I could say to her, we could be riding in a car and I could be doing a radio interview. I could say, hey, Sydney, can you be quiet? Shh. And she would be quiet as a mouse, not make a sound. My son, he never cared. And it was always been my fear that he was going to walk in the middle of some sports center hit because he's got an argument with his older sister.
Yeah. There's a clock on it. He would give me, how long is an episode of SpongeBob? I think it's about 18 minutes.
Yeah.
That's what I would have, which, you know, the way baseball is played these days, that could give me a whole two or three at-bats before he makes an appearance on Sunday Night Baseball, or at least you hear his voice. Yeah, it's tough for a five-year-old to get their head around that, and I'm hopeful that maybe I can set myself up in the basement. Maybe he'll go to bed at some point, and we can get it done that way.
Yeah, when you started that, your explanation of that, I was thinking Yankees, Red Sox. Right. Like, no, he's not going to last through an entire Yankees Red Sox game without blasting through the door to talk to dad about something. All right. So yesterday, Sean Doolittle of the Nationals did an interview with Scott Abraham of ABC7. Give a listen to this part of the interview.
Listen, I know every circumstance is different, and Ryan made his decision. I know your wife is considered high risk. Are you convinced? Are you sure you're going to play this season, Sean?
Not entirely. I'm very much leaning towards playing. And that's the way that I prepared mentally and physically during the break. My wife and I, we think we came up with a plan for her to stay with some family in the area so that she's relatively close. If anything should happen, at least she won't be, you know, halfway across the country. But, you know, these are the conversations that a lot of players have been having with their families and trying to figure out if there's a way where they can make it work for them and come to peace with it. So I think that's where we're at now. I'm feeling good about going into it, I think, as far as it concerns me and my wife.
Yeah, Matt, we had Erin Dolan, who is married to Sean Doolittle, on the podcast last week, and she described, why she's high risk, past lung issues that she'd had. Boy, that pregnant pause, I think, spoke to a lot of how people around baseball are feeling at the moment. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so too. And I heard that sound when it came in yesterday, and the first thing that came into my mind was, wow, this is one of the most important players on the roster. From a baseball standpoint, that's the first thing you think of. And then you remember that two of the first four players to opt out of 2020 are Washington Nationals, Joe Ross, Ryan Zimmerman. So if Sean Doolittle is to opt out, three of the five first opt-outs would be Nationals. They lose Anthony Rendon to free agency. You know, look, this is still a pretty good team, but when you combine all that with the fact that they didn't have a chance to properly celebrate a World Series title by raising the flag on opening day in front of a sold-out crowd in their ballpark, having a ring ceremony, all the things that go along with the trappings of winning they were kind of robbed of because of the COVID environment. This has a chance to be one of the wonkiest World Championship defense seasons since the 98 Marlins, a team that was stripped from all of its celebrity and firepower in the Wayne Huizenga fire sale after winning a World Series in 97. Different circumstance, but it feels eerily similar to me. You know, as far as Sean Doolittle is concerned, we know that he is a pretty thoughtful guy that processes life a little bit differently than a lot of people, certainly from a lot of ball players. It wouldn't surprise me if, based on his wife's medical conditions and based on some philosophical issues, he's a pretty principled guy. It wouldn't surprise me if he decided to opt out this year. I'm not sure what that number is going to end up being. And I'm asked it all the time, as you probably are as well, Buster, a couple dozen at most, maybe around a dozen. You know, I think guys have known this is coming for a while. So anybody who wanted to opt out had probably made that decision by now. A lot of it, however, will depend on how this summer camp spring training 2.0 goes. And if it's so burdensome, if it's so weird, and you're talking about a guy who lives with somebody who has at-risk conditions, or a guy who's made a ton of money already, maybe that number increases.
Yeah, and just a quick follow on the Nationals being this unusual champion. I mean, that even started before any of the COVID stuff started. You know, first day of spring training, all the media members were gathered in West Palm at the site of where the Nationals trained, but not to see the world champion Nationals. They were there because of the sign stealing stuff with the Astros. They have not had an opportunity really to enjoy any of what they accomplished last year. You know, I've had managers in the past tell me that the coolest thing about being a World Series champ is the next spring, you know, bumping into a lot of your peers and getting their kudos and their congratulations, and they haven't had that experience. I agree with you about where we are in terms of players and how they're feeling about things. I thought it was, and reported on this yesterday, how Major League Baseball has determined that it will issue public numbers for the number of players who are tested, the number of players who test positive, and to give percentages. I've been surprised that this was even debated, Matt, over the last 6 weeks, last 6 days, that the Players Association wasn't rubber stamping this immediately, even insisting upon it, because I feel like, look, you owe it to the players and the staff members to tell them exactly what the context that they're walking into. And so I was glad to get word from Major League Baseball sources yesterday that, yes, they're going to put out numbers. I think it's important for everyone involved.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, that brings us to something else, whether you intended to go there or not. I just want to pop in with this. The fact that the PA didn't approve that or bless it or even push for it immediately, as you mentioned, is just the latest example of how anything MLB proposes or asks for is going to be immediately met with a fisheye by the Players Association. It doesn't matter what it is. You know, do you advocate, if MLB advocates that drinking non-fat milk is a better source of calcium than drinking whole milk, and it's better for somebody with a pre-existing cholesterol condition, the PA is automatically going to say, no, hang on. I don't think so. I mean, it's gotten so bad, the level of mistrust, the
non-engagement.
The overriding principle, I think, is this, that the PA is preaching to its constituency. If baseball says it's good for baseball, it's bad for players. I think that's the messaging, and it's really sad, and it's taken us to the place that we're in right now. How anybody could construe an expanded postseason as being anything other than good for the entire game is beyond me. And if they want to call it for what it is, they wanted a piece of that postseason TV contract, then say it. But don't throw up roadblock after roadblock and prevent deals from being consummated based on this kind of vague accusation that whatever baseball wants is bad for you guys. And I tried to hit this down the middle for a long time, Buster, as we all did, because I think there were probably equal sides of blame to lay at the feet of both parties. But the more I got from the proposals and the more I read and the more I thought about it, I think that a lot of the players were led astray by whatever agenda the people at the top of the Players Association might be pushing. And I'm not just talking about Tony Clark. There are a lot of lieutenants and a lot of behind the scenes consultant types who were muddying up the works for Tony and making his job more difficult. And that's part of the reason we got to 60 games and some real bad feelings.
Yeah, and I think that was reflected in what Trevor Bauer's tweet was the night that they had this non-agreement, where he basically he looked at it from 30,000 feet. Wait, this is what we could have had and we didn't trade, and why was that? And I've heard a lot of those similar questions among other players, among agents. It's why I think right now there's a lot of conversation on the player side about, you know what, we need to do something different. And I've been writing about this the last 4 years, and I agree with you.
You have.
Yeah, I really feel like that, you know, in the last 6 weeks leading up to the non-agreement, as you described it, the owners made serious mistakes in some of the things they brought to the players. But I keep wondering when someone is going to look at the player strategy of non-engagement, which has really been since they got routed in the 2016 CBA talks, because it just seems like they've had so many opportunities, you know, on-field initiatives, pace of play initiatives. Why was there not horse trading? Why was there not, okay, you guys want us to play faster? What do you give us? Do you deal with tanking? Do you deal with service time manipulation? I remember in late March, early April, you know, feeling like, okay, the players have some leverage in this moment. Swap it out. Get something in return. And I agree with you that big picture, you're trying to figure out what good does it do the players to not to have agreed to expanded postseason. Or another smaller example, but meaningful in this particular time, why is there even a debate about whether or not they're going to be wearing microphones on the field?
Yeah, especially in this environment. And look, I think one of the real shames of this, and there's a lot of shames here, but if a season could have been salvaged of longer length and something more palatable could have been agreed to by both parties here, one of the things that prevented that from happening was this idea, this philosophy that they were going to kind of dig in and start working on the 2021 CBA now. The entire focus of all the discussions that they just went through should have been, how do we get on the field for 2020? That's it. Let's agree not to dive into the 18 months down the road discussion that's going to really take a long time and wring some hands. Let's just figure out how to get on the field. And the problem is, when, and this probably should have happened sooner too, Buster, when the commissioner flies out to Phoenix, has a face-to-face with the president of the Players Association, Tony Clark, and you think that you have a deal when you get on the plane 6 hours later, and then the phone rings someplace over Nebraska, and it's somebody else involved in the PA, and he says, oh yeah, Mr. Commissioner, you know, about that agreement that you just struck with the president of our group, I've got some questions and some other things that need to be addressed. Why would you fly out there to meet with the highest ranking official in the organization when somebody else is just going to shoot bullet holes through the deal? Did they really want a deal? I mean, I have my questions at this point, because what they were presented, and back to your point on the Trevor Bauer tweet, that was a win for the Players Association. They wanted 100% prorated. They wanted their whole salary. They got that number up. They got other things that they wanted. Everything they asked for was in there, except for a piece of the postseason money and the ability to file a grievance. And that the grievance thing is where MLB drew the line. So, look, we've kicked this around for such a long time. The 2021 agreement negotiations are going to be brutal. The landscape's pretty bad right now. I'm just pleased that they got 60 games agreed to kind of here. We hope to have a postseason, barring any unforeseen COVID-related difficulties. And maybe some of the good feelings that'll come from this can help, mend a little peace in 18 months.
You hope so. And, you know, I wrote a piece in mid-May saying that whenever, you know, the dust settled and that we're kind of at that point now that both sides need to sort of reassess, okay, what did we do to contribute to this situation, to this incredibly toxic, non-productive relationship? And I think there is going to be some change on the player side before we get to the next big round of negotiations. We'll see how that plays out. All right. So of all of the coronavirus protocols, what do you think is the most cumbersome?
Man, there are a lot of them that you wonder just how letter of the law players will be able to execute. I mean, all players are taking this seriously, and I don't mean to indicate that anybody's going to just blow this off. But the idea that bullpen pitchers have their own kind of hermetically sealed bucket of baseballs, it is such a weird one for me. So, you know, when the rosters are big in the beginning of the season, and I say there's a 13-man bullpen down there or an 11-man bullpen, you're going to have 11 different containers of baseballs that'll be labeled. The bullpen catcher, this poor guy, is going to have to figure out when to clean his glove, when to wear the surgical glove, the plastic surgical glove on his throwing hand, and then to take it off between guys warming up. And the guys that really get hosed are the equipment guys and the kids working in the clubhouse. They've got to sort out a ton of new equipment, medical equipment, in addition to all the different baseball containers that now exist. When all that stuff gets put on the truck and sent off on the road, it's more work for the clubbies on the other end, on the receiving end. Oh, and by the way, clubbies don't get tipped the way they did because of the 2016 CBA. So this whole thing is so messy. I want to watch, and that's the process I want to watch when camps open. I want to watch what that bullpen looks like with all the different color-coded buckets of baseballs that are labeled for each pitcher's use. That to me is going to be fascinating.
I hope players, as they go through this, really consider folks like the clubhouse guys in terms of how much more difficult their job is, or their teammates like Sean Doolittle, or like we talked last week with Jake Diekman. I've heard from teams that there's early pushback from some players about following the health and safety protocol, which, Matt, I think for you and I, because we live in the Northeast and it's now standard operating procedure, it's almost mind-boggling to think that there would be some folks who'd be pushing back on this stuff.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, look, I know it's going to be it slows down the process of preparing for a season, right? Because spring training batting groups are going to be smaller. If a guy wants to go into the hydrotherapy tub or the cryotherapy tub after a game or a workout, he's got to wait for the tub to be drained and then cleaned between each use. So whereas, you know, you used to be able to get a dozen guys into those contraptions post game, that number's going to shrink. The training room, you know, where guys would stack themselves up and wait, and you take a corner here and get your stem, you take a corner here and wear your ice, those scenes are not going to happen anymore. So, for all those reasons, I guess there are guys that are holding out and saying, this is all too much. But to your point, that's how it has to be. Because, look, we've already seen some positive tests. There's already a little bit of fear there. If there's a super-duper star that tests positive for the disease, that's going to be the game changer that we all want to avoid.
All right. The other day when we held a conference call to talk about our game coverage, you jumped in and asked a question about field mics, which you're fascinated by.
I am. And I'm hopeful that and I've heard some rumblings that this is being kicked around, that Major League Baseball may be worried about sensitive things being compromised on the field. And for that reason, they may mandate the obscuring of some of the natural sound that we get from the players, because in an empty stadium, let's face it, we'll hear everything. If the field mics are placed the same way they would have been in a normal game with fans, everything will be heard. Now, there will be people, and we have the technology not only at ESPN, but around the country, all the regionals, all the other broadcasters, they can mute out and, wash the curse words. And that's something that certainly we want to avoid. But I think what baseball's worried about is a mound visit where you just might pick something up. A conversation between an umpire and a hitter when the hitter steps out. Where'd you have that pitch? Was that low and away? Really? Oh, you're brutal. I mean, that kind of stuff is what we all agree, you and I and people that broadcast baseball for a living, we agree that stuff's good and we need it. But baseball's worried about something sensitive or unflattering going out, and they're kicking around ways to, pump in crowd noise, obscure some of that great gold that we might get. That's why, man, I hope that those conversations take a long time and that we can at least get a couple of weeks in with live mics and real conversations. If we want to sell the game to the next generation, it's got to be more transparent. And that kind of thing is a great help in that cause.
Oh, 100%. Matt, yesterday we had a listener question. He was asking about that very thing, about, the sound and how players are affected. And I love the idea that it's going to be like a high school game at the big league level, where if you're on the field and a guy yells at you from the other dugout, you're going to hear it in a way that you wouldn't.
Yes.
During the regular season, because all that's obscured. Every sound that's made, the banging of a bat on the dugout or as it falls out of the bat rack, a hitter dropping his helmet, you're going to hear that. And there's something kind of fun about that when you're talking about major league players playing. It's like it's going to be like a spring training B game at 10 a.m. where everybody hears everything.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, remembering how much fun we had with Pete Alonso and with the whole Mets team in spring training before the shutdown. I mean, this will be a little bit different because there'll be a little more seriousness to the games because they count. It's not spring training. But, if you're doing a Braves game, and Pete Alonso draws a walk and gets to first base and starts chit-chatting with Freddie Freeman, there could be some pretty fun voyeuristic moments for the fans and for us to just listen into what they're talking about.
Go ahead.
Nobody wants to pry, and I don't want to hear sensitive stuff in terms of game strategy. But let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater here. Let's try to figure out a way to preserve some of the real sound that's going to come from the field.
And I bet you if they took a vote of the players, the vast majority of players say, yeah, that was fun. Because I remember after that all access week and, your game with the Mets and our game with the Yankees that we had, the microphones on Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo, Freddie Freeman narrating his trip around the bases. The players I talked to love that.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. I mean, again, there will be something different about the fact that these games count, and we're not asking guys to wear mics necessarily, but let's just try to enjoy. Let's give us something good in all this. And this has a potential to be a very unintended great consequence.
Exactly. All right, Matt, thanks for doing this. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Buster, you got it.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Todd Radom is the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world, in summer camp as we speak. Todd, first off, how are you doing this week?
Hanging in there, Buster. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I know you, like I, very sad with the news that the minor league season was canceled. I've gotten to know, because I grew up in the state of Vermont, the folks who work for the Vermont Lake Monsters, they're just such great people. And you know, understanding that, you know, last fall we got the news that you might see the reduction of the number of minor league affiliates. And then the news that the season will not be played this year. I just, my heart aches for them. And for so many other people that I know around the minor leagues, and I know you do a lot of work with minor league affiliates as well.
Yeah, I do, Buster, and I'll echo those sentiments. You know, minor league baseball is just the purest distillation of baseball itself, right? You go to a game, it is, you know, these franchises are just so, you know, just so critical to their communities in so many cases. And I think of my friends, first of all, at the minor league baseball offices in St. Petersburg. But, you know, an example for me, this past, you know, this past offseason, we unveiled the identity for the new AAA team in Wichita. So I went out there in November, beautiful, brand new stadium, just unbelievable reception, 1,000 people at the naming announcement. And they don't have a season. And, you know, granted, that's a AAA team. But you take it on down the line. Buster, you referenced the Lake Monsters, the New York Penn League. Yeah, my heart aches as well. And we hope that they can get through this. And, you know, again, for people who really don't understand the working part of it, minor league baseball depends upon ticket sales. Ticket sales, hot dogs, beer, and all that, and the margins are thin to begin with. So fingers crossed and all the best.
Yeah, all week in the aftermath of that news, I've been wearing that Wichita cap that you sent me for that reason, just to, you know, just to have them top of mind, because it is such a difficult time for minor league affiliates. And, you know, you hope, as we talked about with Hembo on the podcast earlier in the week, that, you know, folks with Major League Baseball can help the minor league teams get through these really difficult times. All right. So we're doing examination of ballparks at the major league level week to week. And this week we're talking about the Trop. And when you sent me that note yesterday, I sent you a response back that, you know, I got to be honest, I kind of love the Trop.
And we did not follow up on that intentionally, because, Buster, I want to know, why do you love the Trop?
Because, as I've explained to you in the past, from my perspective as a reporter, it's all about utility. And
no,
so many times, yeah, when I used to, you know, cover the National League, when I covered the Padres, I covered the Mets in 97, you know, we'd go to Miami, and you'd have the Marlins games, and late in the afternoon or in the first few innings, invariably, you would have rain delays. And you'd sit there, and it was the most predictable thing ever, those late afternoon storm clouds gathering down in Florida. And so when the Trop opened, my feeling was, you know what? I know we're going to play. And I can't tell you how many times I've been inside the Trop late in the afternoon, and there's a raging thunderstorm outside, and inside they're taking batting practice, and how happy that's made me feel. I know you have different feelings about that place.
Yeah, we come at it from a couple of different points of view without question. But Buster, you know, you've mentioned ease of press elevators and things like that. I thought it might be down to that too. But at any rate, yeah, I mean, like most fans, the Trop is okay. You know, we do get the utility of it. And certainly rain in Florida at a certain point of the day always happens. So I will give you that. We don't like to crush any ballpark, because, like we keep saying, every ballpark is special to its particular fan base. So a couple of items just, you know, went down bullet points. Amazingly, the Trop opened in 1990, right? We talked about Rogers Center being as old as it is. The Trop is middle-aged, Buster. I love the fact, and I did then, that it was home to the NHL's Tampa Bay Lightning for several seasons in the early 90s, this gigantic space with a hockey rink, right? And we kind of forget about the fact that it was very nearly the home of the San Francisco Giants, who actually announced a move to St. Petersburg in 1992. So history and what might have been, just amazing stuff.
So uniquely, the first thing I think of when I think of the Trop is that symmetrical roof, right? That slanted roof. For those who don't know, it was designed to reduce interior volume in order to keep air conditioning costs down. How about that? So we're getting to all the pluses here. And then you go inside and a couple of things come to mind for me. I think the rotunda is kind of a cool thing. We always talk about this all important sense of place. And the first thing you see, kind of like an alternate version of Citi Field, right, is that rotunda. So that's kind of a neat thing. How about the Ted Williams Hitters Museum, right? The Ted Williams Hitters Museum is a pretty cool thing. Contains some history, not a ton of Rays stuff in there, but it's a pretty neat thing and it's available. And of course, Buster and Taylor, the touch tank. For those of us who want an up close and personal experience, the joys of actual Rays out there. Have you ever done that, Buster?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, I'm an animal guy. I haven't grown up on a farm. So absolutely. As you were going through it, I'm like trying to justify the fact that I feel like the Trop's not that bad. And that was going to be one of my arguments. Like they got the touch tank out there. That's a cool thing you don't see in Yankee Stadium.
No, you do not. And we'll talk about that maybe next week. We talk about Yankee Stadium. But then we'll go down the line and I'll keep it brief. The catwalks. Buster, the catwalk. All right. Also, I think, you know, when I think of the Trop, I think of one of the most bleak interior spaces imaginable. The lighting and the outfield optics. Let's just say they're less than good, but in a way that's a little bit different from Chase Field because it's a little bit smaller, probably because of that that angled roof to keep the interior volume down. The location, not exactly stellar, but hey, you're going to a ball game and you're staying in there and you should stay in there and watch baseball in a guaranteed rain-free atmosphere. So that's what I've got. You know, it was a much bleaker place when the Rays were not very good also.
Yeah. Let's face it. It's a dump. There's no question about it. All right.
All right. And 5 years from now, when we're doing this, and hopefully there's baseball 5 years from now, where do the Rays play? Well, they're probably going to be playing there in 5 years, but 10 years when Buster and I are collecting Social Security, where are the Rays located?
Oh my gosh. You might as well ask me how the next labor talks are going to go with the uncertainty, because I don't think this is necessarily a time you want to be asking for public funding for ballparks.
No, not a popular thing. No,
I would. You know what? The safest bet might be Nashville, but let's not go there.
All right. Like to go to Nashville. But
yeah, exactly. Anyway. All right. This week's quiz.
Week 17, guys. Unbelievable. Which one of these cities was never home to a National League franchise? Was it Newark, Syracuse, Buffalo, or Cleveland? Going way, way back here, never home to an NL franchise. Newark, Syracuse, Buffalo, or Cleveland?
Man. Taylor, go ahead.
Oh, boy. Another spin of the roulette wheel here. Let's go Cleveland. Cleveland rocks.
I'm the same way. This is one under the category of I should know this, but I don't. I'm going to say Buffalo.
Both of those were National League franchises way back when Buster was a Cub reporter. The answer is Newark, guys. They're Hall of Famers, as a matter of fact, from both the Buffalo and Cleveland franchises, the Buffalo Bisons and the famous Cleveland Spiders, who finished with the worst record in the history of Major League Baseball in 1899 and were eventually contracted. So there you go.
See, I knew the Cleveland one. I was hoping that Taylor would go there, but I did not take advantage of it. Time is running out for me. There's no question about it. It's getting late early, as Yogi Berra would say.
Yes, Newark. Newark. We'll convene in Newark.
Thanks, Todd.
All right, guys.
Bleacher Tweets.
All righty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for Thursday, our de facto Friday show. We will be off tomorrow as it is a company holiday, unless, of course, there is some major breaking news as we discussed before we press record here. So should the season be canceled or something along those lines, we will hop on the pod and disseminate that information. First up here is a personal question. With that Field of Dreams game announcement, I can't tell you how many times we've gotten the question, what's going on with the Field of Dreams game? While they were negotiating whether they're going to play it all, honestly, I've never thought about the Field of Dreams game before doing this podcast. I know that's going to make some of our hardcore baseball listeners a little bit angry, but do you understand the affinity for us for this? Why people were so gung-ho about knowing what was up with it? What's the deal with the Field of Dreams game?
Yeah, because the movie's so emotional, and the emotional attachment to baseball and everything that it reflects. it doesn't surprise me that at this time that baseball has been shut down, that people are really drawn to that and drawn to the idea of the Field of Dreams game. I mentioned in the podcast in the past, man, I would love to do that game. Like, if they told me that I could be part of that broadcast, I would drive from here to Iowa to part of it. Just having grown up on a farm, having been in cornfields, that would be so cool to go there. So I'm kind of bummed we're not doing that game.
Sorry if I offended your sensibilities there, Buster.
No, that's okay. I get it. I understand.
All right. Next up, Max Leibowitz at Max_Leibowitz writes in, Buster, will the Universal DH extend Albert Pujols' career? Could you see him and the Cardinals making a reunion?
No, Max, I don't. I think he's going to go through the end of his career with the Angels, the end of his contract, and that'll probably be it for him. I mean, one thing, if you're the Cardinals in their situation and the consideration of bringing Albert back, I've had general managers through the years tell me that one of the questions you always have to ask is, what's it going to be like if it goes really badly? In other words, if you have to pull the plug. I'll give you one example of that. I remember when the Yankees were talking about trading for Ichiro, but they had heard that Ichiro wasn't wild about the idea of being a part-time player. And before they consummated that trade, because Ichiro is such an iconic player, Brian Cashman got on the phone with him and said, look, I want to hear from you that it's going to be okay if you're not a regular. I wanted to have that direct conversation. That's the only way it could potentially work with the Cardinals. If John Mazzella got on the phone with Albert and said, Albert, if it doesn't turn out that you're an everyday player, how will you feel about that? In those situations, you have to have the player and the team in the same page.
Next up, Nicole Williams at Nicole_33970 writes in, how are the Rockies signing Matt Kemp to a minor league deal if there isn't going to be a minor league season?
Yeah, and that's just to put him on that list of 60 players as possibilities. So if the Rockies are going along and they have a need for an outfielder, Matt Kemp will become an option for them. He probably, in the interim, will just work out with the major leaguers. He'll participate in inter-squad games, and then they'll just have to wait and see if some need develops.
We have a fat edition of the Bleacher Tweets here as we head into the weekend. We got AA Ron San Diego writing in, what is the hesitation from players for expanded playoffs? I would have guessed this would be one piece that they would be all for. And going back to a previous question, how would you format the postseason if it was entirely up to you? So a double-edged sword there for you, Buster.
Yeah, this year I would include as many teams as possible. At one point during the process, we heard about the possibility of 16 teams. Aaron, I agree with that. Trevor Bauer asked that same question in the tweet when they didn't have the agreement. Like, why wouldn't you agree to this? I think it's a good thing for the players going forward. I hope that they consider it.
Last one for today. I've been sitting on this one for a special occasion going into a long weekend, I think is proper timing. Triple Shy at BB_Ben29 writes in, you just won the Hall of Fame lottery, which means you get to select any player you want to go into the Hall of Fame next year, and they'll be inducted. No questions asked. Don't give me a list. Give me one name. Who is it, Buster?
Triple, I'm going to break your rule. I'm going to give you two names, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Boom. Because they're two of the greatest players of all time. I'll repeat what I said on the podcast yesterday when we were talking about Kennesaw Mountain Landis. The character clause that a lot of the writers cite when they don't vote for those guys was written by or is believed to have been written by Kennesaw Mountain Landis, who was a segregationist. Stop with the whole retroactive morality. Put the best players in the Hall of Fame. And if there's information regarding PED use, make sure that information's in the Hall of Fame as well. But it's not a house of the holy. It's a baseball museum, and it's a great baseball museum, and the best baseball players should be have plaques there.
That does it for Bleacher Tweets with a Hammer from Buster. Happy 4th of July, everyone. And if you are a little bit down about America and about America's birthday, give it, you know, use it as a time for reflection and, you know, some hope for the future. That's how I'm viewing it.
Yeah, there you go. I agree with you. And it'd be great to, you know, for me, I know, and I know for you, Taylor, as well, to be with family this weekend. That'll be absolutely awesome. That's it for this week. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. And again, my thanks to Matt and to Todd and Taylor. And remember, hate and inequality based on race is something we should fight against every day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, don't forget to listen to the Fantasy Focus podcast. Check out all podcasts at ESPN.com/podcenter. Baseball Tonight, the podcast.